Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. My guest today is Ben Thomas, a man who wears many hats. He's the winemaker for Port Townsend Vineyards. He's on the Port Townsend City Council. And to some, even more importantly, he's the father of a four-year-old. Each one of those is an incredibly demanding job. So welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you.
You're obviously used to juggling multiple demands for your time. This radio interview is going to be one of your easier assignments. As regular listeners know, I always start at the beginning with a very simple question. Are you a local boy born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
Pretty much. I actually was born at Swedish Hospital in Seattle, but we lived in La Push.
Aha.
So we rented from Lillian Pullen, who's kind of a woman who kind of kept the culture and language there alive, the Quileutes, for a long time. So it was a neat place to start.
Okay. You know? And what did your folks do?
Commercial fishermen. So my dad was a troller.
Okay. And are you an only child?
Nope. I have one brother, younger brother, 4 years younger, named Jesse Thomas. He's been involved in local housing projects here.
So you're the oldest, number
I'm
one
the oldest,
son.
Yeah. Okay. Not the most mature, but the oldest.
Technically speaking, you're the oldest. Okay. And where did you go to school? I always like to ask people about their high school years because it's a very formative time for most people. So where'd you end up going to high school?
That's true. Well, I started here in Port Townsend. We moved here when I was five.
Okay.
So kind of all those years leading up to that. So, but went 1 year here and then 1 year in Olympia because my mom was finishing up at Evergreen. She got her degree there. And then we moved to Seattle and I lived there, you know, graduated from high school in Seattle. And then moved back here when I was 20.
Okay. So. And when you were in high school, what do you think your peers thought of you? Kids lump each other, you know, like he's a jock, she's a nerd, whatever. And the person might not agree. They might agree. They might not. What do you think they thought about you?
Well, I cringe to think. But, you know, I was the guy with one of the people with the Iron Maiden t-shirts and jean jacket with the American flag hung upside down on the back on safety pins, you know, just that kind of, you know, semi kind of rebellious, but without enough of a clear thing to rebel against, to be honest. But
okay, you're a fairly large man. Were you into sports?
I was kind of into sports. I was probably more interested in the, I didn't get to play football, but I would have enjoyed that, I think. But we played soccer and baseball. So.
Okay. And you just mentioned that your mom went to Evergreen and got a degree. Mm-hmm. What'd she get her degree in?
Biology. And then then we moved to Seattle so she could get her master's degree in toxicology.
Toxicology. Okay. Yeah. What'd she end up doing?
Well, she worked for Boeing for a while, but then she got sick of that and moved back to the peninsula and started a cidery and winery.
And which one?
Eagle Mount Wine and Cider.
Is she still doing that?
She's still doing it. Every day. It's a lot of work.
So she had it when you were a kid then?
Not a kid, but we started making wine and cider together actually in the 90s. And so I was in my 20s. And she just kept cruising at it while I was doing other things. She just kept growing her thing into a real business.
Okay. So. And her name is?
Trudy Davis.
Trudy Davis. Okay. And did you do some part-time work at the winery?
Oh, I was helped out, you know, when I was around and not traveling or something. And I love that. I've always fantasized about being a winemaker.
Okay.
But we're jumping to...
Okay. And so there you were in your 20s, and you were helping out a bit with her business. What else were you doing?
I mean, I worked a lot of restaurant gigs, tree planting for years, crab fishing off the coast. You know, I did a lot of different type of things to, in my mind, instead of going to college, I did a little bit of community college, but instead of going to college, I've chose to do the work build an education through work, like different types of work, you know, so I really kind of played around with a lot of different possibilities.
Okay, and for a while you were a newspaper man.
Well, that was probably the most intense education I got, self-driven education. My friend and I started an alternative newspaper in 2020 after she had been arrested at the WTO protests in Seattle, World Trade Organization protests in Seattle in 1999. We went over there and she got arrested in her jail cell. She, Gigi Glenn is her name. She hatched a plan that involved me helping.
How come you didn't get arrested too? Were you there?
She had a more of an activist mindset, and I had more of a, I was pretending I was part of, I was a union, I was, there was different types of groups, right, there, which, right, was really actually what was kind of beautiful about it. You know, so you had union people marching with, you know, every nature of protester you can imagine, it seems like, gathered together, you know, 40, 50,000 people. And I had my union, my Alaska Fishermen's Union hat on at the time. So, which, you know, was I that motivated by that? I don't know. But I was trying not to be. Anyway, she had a little more of a vision for why she was there.
Okay.
To be honest.
And so the two of you started this paper together.
Yeah. I mean, we had been talking for years before that, working together at Coyote Found Candles, which is a great part of Port Townsend history that's gone now. But it was a neat little candle factory here in town. We just talked all the time about, you know, how important critical thinking was and free thought and free expression and everything. And so we kind of gathered together under that kind of rubric to cultivate critical thinking, because that was our epiphany after that event, that if at every level of society people are able to think critically, they are somewhat free from their bonds.
Okay, the term alternative newspaper can mean a lot of different things. So what were the kind of things this paper was covering? And by the way, how frequent was it? Was it a weekly?
It was a monthly.
Okay.
We thought we'd do it weekly at first, and like, oh, wow, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
So we kind of did all the different versions of an alternative paper, to be honest. We put it all together. We had art sections. We had a section for visual art, music, theater, literature, and even movie reviews. You know, we had that part of the paper. And then we had, you know, we covered the city council meetings. We covered the mill, did kind of an expose of sorts of the mill and things like that, you know, where we kind of did tackle news projects around here. And there was a lot of letters and community input.
So did you write for the newspaper, or were you more on the business side?
Yes, but I actually tried. Gigi and I's goal was to have our names in the paper as little as possible. That was kind of we're trying to create a self-perpetuating nonprofit, you know, model that could keep working no matter who the people were. Wasn't fully successful in that regard, because it did finally end 5 years later, but when we both gave up, and other lives to get to, you know. But a lot of people did put a lot of work into it, you know, so, and a lot of advertisers. We had probably, you know, about 100 advertisers.
Cool.
You know, small ads that were not too expensive, but they were very supportive. I was really impressed with the community.
Well, publishing a newspaper can be tremendously expensive, even if you had ads that, you know, so was it economically viable?
Oh, no. No, I was crab fishing at the time off the coast in Westport. And so I'd have to, especially in the winter time. In fact, we didn't usually do a January issue because I was gone the month of December. And, you know, holidays also get in the way. But I was somewhat supporting the printing of the paper, at least in the early years, that way. Eventually, we got fairly sustainable. We had these big balls, big bashes that we would have, concerts, basically, with lots of people and can dancers and all sorts of crazy chaos, and it was a lot of fun. You know, that was a fundraiser to help kind of get a few months, couple months printing done. And
okay, well, we were talking the other day. You mentioned that not all of the can dancing was traditional.
No, right. The first couple of years we did the can dancing, it was women. The third year it was men, and they were good. It wasn't like it wasn't a.
Were you can dancing?
I was not. No. I would not. Okay. I would drag down the level. It was like the Nanda. The folks from Nanda were can dancing, and so they added some flips to it and everything. So that's pretty fun.
Sounds good. But in the end, you decided couldn't continue it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was just hard to maintain that. I literally at the end there, I was living in my van. You know, that's how,
yeah.
That's the level of.
Lots of people experiment with different jobs and personas and whatever when they're in their 20s or so. But at some point, most of them realize, hey, you know, I want to live in a nicer place than my van.
Right. Yeah.
And so what was your path after you?
Well, actually, the first thing I did was I ran off and joined the circus. So it wasn't very practical.
Okay. Doing what?
This was the new old time Chautauqua. So okay. I did that for quite a few years in the summertime. And for fundraisers, too. We did fundraiser events. But usually it's the summertime, 2 or 3 weeks in the middle of the summer. But it takes a lot of lead up work, you know. So I was usually doing either cooking for it or stage managing or, you know, helping make posters and some of the organizing, but just a little bit. So that was fun. Not profitable at all, obviously.
Right. that's another thing that you probably wouldn't make a lot of money at that.
Circus, traveling, small towns, visiting tribes in different areas of the West Coast. We went to, actually right around that, the early days was, we went down to New Orleans after Katrina and helped, even did some work on houses down there and tried to feed people and, so that was fun too, you know. So there was, it had a lot of things to it, you know. I learned a lot there too.
Yeah,
about organizing and disorder and chaos. The importance of chaos, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, and I also worked as a leader for a year, and sirens worked at, you know, bartended, and then at some point I thought this is probably my last chance to not live in Port Townsend and to try somewhere else. So I just decided I was going to move to a city and chose Portland at the time. So in 2006, I went down to Portland and lived down there for 10 years and was a winemaker the whole time.
Okay. So you, because you had the experience from...
I had built it mostly working here with my mom, but yeah, so that was, I didn't have a degree in it or anything to kind of say, oh, here's why you need to hire me. But it was more like just the ability to work hard and continue learning
Was there any one particular vineyard that you worked for? Or
most of the time I was at one biodynamic vineyard called Montanore Estate, which you should be able to buy in town, I think. People can still get it. But we were at the time, we were the largest 100% biodynamic winery and vineyard in the country. And that was really exciting to be part of.
What does that term actually mean?
I mean, it can mean a lot of things depending on how you do it. So it's a Rudolf Steiner philosophy from the 1920s on how to... It predates the capital O organic farming method, which, of course, that's always been happening before all the chemicals came, but without, it didn't have to have a name back then. Before there was a name for that, biodynamics was the first movement to push back against chemical farming. You know, so you didn't need to have, because they were using lots of fertilizers and, you know, destroying the soils, basically. So it was a way to get, it's still a viable method too. You know, you still get a decent crop and you get really good quality. Quality becomes the most important thing. But you're working on composts. They do a lot of compost teas and things like that. And working with the compost, like there's burying cow horns filled with manure, which we would do every fall with the interns that would come from all over the world. And which was really fun. I have great friends in Italy and Germany and other places that, you know, that were my interns and stuff. So that was kind of that neat little connection still. You still keep in contact. But yeah, doing all the kind of, people would come because of our biodynamic.
Okay. So you were there for about 10 years.
Yeah. 9 years.
Okay.
As a winemaker.
And what happened? Why did you move again?
Well, I fell in love and wanted to settle down a little bit more. And my mom was working on buying the palindrome up here, or Arcadia is what I think of it as, but the palindrome is the venue, and we came up here to help with that. And then we thought, well, let's not get too wrapped up in family in a business sense. So I ran into an old friend who was planting a vineyard here, Jens Kopenroth, Jens and Carly. And so they got in their minds that a vineyard and a winery would be a good thing to do at this stage in their lives. And so I decided, I told them I'd help. And then I got wrapped in it pretty big, you know.
So when did you join them?
That was 2015. We started doing some stuff. So I was more like consulting. And then I, in 2016, started full time.
I guess it would take a couple of years to actually get going.
Some would say a couple generations.
Ah, okay.
Like wine in particular, because you have so much back stock and the time of the vines to get going.
Yeah.
And, but we were able to kind of ramp that up pretty quickly and get on our feet here as a, you know, a full production where we grow grapes. We don't grow all the grapes. We grow a portion.
And so when did you actually open?
That opened in 2017. Was probably June of 2017, okay. I think. Because you have to have some wine. In fact, I started some of the wine in 2015 so that there would be some red wines, because red wines take a couple of years. Started some of those when I was down in Oregon still.
So 2017 was when you really were getting going. But, mm-hmm. you know, now you have two locations, and that was not the original. How did it grow?
We started the vineyard first. And that was mostly planted in 2016. And then I'm trying to remember actually, some of it was planted in 2015, excuse me.
So the vineyard, the location of the vineyard mm-hmm. is right outside of town, right?
The vineyard is right in the very center. It's like if you could pinpoint the very center of Port Townsend. So the vineyard, the winery is on the edge of town.
Okay.
So the vineyard is off Umatilla, which is off San Juan.
Yeah.
So over there behind.
No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
I've seen vines over there, but I didn't realize that was what it was.
Huh. Yeah, it's probably me on the tractor.
Okay.
I love the farming part of it. You know, it's maybe the most enjoyment I get out of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, when outsiders or non-wine people hear the term winemaker, they don't really think of you in your Carhartt sitting in a tractor.
Right, I know. Winemaking does take a surprising amount of forklifting and tractor work, I will say. It's true. But, so we do as much hands-on as we can, of course, as part of that, you know.
So describe more or less what you do, not in fine detail.
Yeah, that would take a while.
Exactly.
what's really neat to me as a person who's never wanted to focus on one specialty, winemaking, especially if you include the vineyard, is so diverse. It's like every skill set rolled up into one, especially if you add in like writing about the wines and stuff like that, which I have to do sometimes. So it's every day is different. You know, one day we're pruning in the vineyard. One day on the tractor, you know, cultivating or spraying in the summertime. All organic sprays, by the way, if you ever see. it's very gentle stuff. And then in the winery, it's, you know, we're tasting through wines, doing tasting trials, which meaning like you're doing little blends and testing them out and tasting them. It could be cleaning, lots of cleaning to do in a winery. I get a lot of help on that, I'll be honest. There's a couple other folks that do a lot of work.
Yeah.
Dustin and Mick and... They do a lot of that side of it. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, just working hands-on, too, in the winery.
Okay.
And then some lab stuff, some chemistry to test, you know, your acid levels and whatnot.
Okay. So people call it the Port Townsend Vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
But is it the Port Townsend Winery or Vineyards or both?
Well, I think the business is actually Port Townsend Winery, LLC.
Okay.
But Port Townsend Vineyards is the front of house.
Okay, and there are two locations, one downtown.
Yeah, there's a building downtown.
That location.
It's called Vintage.
Vintage, okay. Yeah. That location was just about open when the pandemic hit, as I recall.
Oh, my gosh,
What was the story there?
Well, we ramped up, we had a chef and his team, and we're now doing Batch Brothers, but they had set up a really good menu, and it was really exciting. Like, we had a really good kitchen down there and everything kind of ramped up to go, and which was maybe even more of a restaurant than we initially intended to do, but it was really good and it was exciting, and we were open for 2 weeks and then the shutdowns came. So that was, you know, that certainly changed a lot of the direction of what we were doing there.
Wow. But. Well, all businesses were really hurt, upset by the pandemic.
Yeah.
A lot of people went under, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you guys have come out on the other end, but what do you think in general was the impact? You must have had to cut back in quite a way.
Yes. I mean, we had that, and I would also say that 2019 was the year we really ramped up production, too, you know, and so we had a lot of a lot more wine than we normally would have, you know, and then we, everything's a little slower, you know, in the business. Not like you couldn't, you could, you know, be selling to Costco and peddling wines out in the public, but there's less people that come to visit and want to sit inside.
Sure.
Even today, I would say that the numbers are down from that.
Okay.
Impact.
Well, at some point along the way, you also decided to run for Port Townsend City Council.
Whoops. it's been fun.
And you started in January of 22?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And why did you decide to run?
Well, I mean, any kind of decision like that is complicated, the
right.
answer. But I'll try to sum up. Things clicked in my head on, honestly, January 6th, the year before, 2021, right? We had a big, you know, maybe crisis in democracy, potentially. People could take different angles on that. I don't mean to make it political, but there was, it was dramatic in either way. Either way you want to, what your beliefs are. But what it really said to me is that I just realized, democracy, you know, I'm not saying we are a democracy, but we have the principles of a democracy. You know, it's a representative republic, you know, there's... We won't get in the quibbles of the details of how our country's put together, but there's a principle of democracy that's really important as part of us, that everybody should have a say in how we live. Taxation with, you know, needs to have representation is one of maybe the founding principles, but I would also include it to people that don't no longer pay taxes, people that live here, you know. So I just wanted to do whatever I could. And I hadn't thought of city council at the time, but whatever I could to work to help maintain democracy and access to it. And I, you know, as I read, started reading things and really realized how little that spirit is really alive, even in with people that theoretically believe in it. You know, I think a lot of people feel disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's in one corner or the other corner. It's people feel disenfranchised in a lot of groups feel really disenfranchised. And I think if you get everybody back a little bit believing in the system of working together, we can do a lot better than we've been doing.
I think. So you were elected.
So that was my philosophy going into it. Yeah.
So you're elected, you get there, you look around, and what do you see the big issues from a practical point of view?
Potholes.
Yes, I agree with you.
That's the uniting thing. I feel like that's everybody. And, you know, in a way, it makes sense that it would be everybody because everybody uses the roads, no matter
right.
you have a car or you don't have a car. You're using the road somehow. I mean, unless, well, even if you are homebound, you are using the road because people are coming to your place.
And right.
Deliveries
bringing
and
your stuff.
So it's just, that is a kind of a unifying thing. I don't have a personal passion for it. I just see that as like, this is symbolic. If we can't pull this off, what are we doing here, you know, as a community and as a city? I don't, not to criticize anybody work at the city, because everybody's been really working hard on it. It's just we're a little bit overmatched by the amount of roads we have, how old the roads are on average, and with the amount of people we have here. It's just, it's out of balance. If you look at other towns, the ratio of, I think the metric we use is lane miles. Sorry, I didn't mean to go so political here, but lane miles per person or people per lane miles. It's, you know, depending on how big the roads are, but there's very few. I mean, we're really under, so all of it comes on of not enough people to help.
Okay. Contribute. Well, you know, I was sort of shocked at some of the numbers that you threw at me the other day. One was this, we all pay taxes but so lots of people think, well, I pay my tax bill. Why can't they fix the road? But in fact, the city only gets 12% of that money. Is that correct?
From the property taxes.
Property taxes.
I mean, it may depend on, I don't know if there's other factors on, I think all the school district stuff would be overlapped in Port Townsend. So yeah, we get a very small cut to our general fund from the property taxes. And I think people don't, you kind of just assume the city gets most of it. I think that's honestly what I assumed before.
Yeah, to be honest,
I started looking like, oh wow.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, schools is the biggest one. And
well, okay. The council has 7 members.
Mm-hmm.
There's a city manager.
Right.
Now, why can't the 7 of you just sit down and say, well, okay, we've only got 12%, but we're going to take 10 of the 12% and fix the roads.
Right. Well, in a way, that is a possibility. What's already established, though, is you have a lot of, you know, I've been digging a little bit more into the budget I'm still not, it's not my strong suit, it's not the budget yet. It will be in a couple of years, but it's a slow grow for me on that one. But digging into that, you realize there's a lot of things that are previously like established, and you can't just pull the plug on a bunch of things that are already in motion. Obviously, and there's some debts you got to pay down and other things that are, and obviously staff, you know, a lot of it goes to staff, you know, and you think, well, we don't need a staff for this or that, but it's hard. If you look around like and look through, it's not like anybody's sitting around. We need the permitting people. We need, you know, we need all the, it's not like there's a pool. I get what you're saying. And I think that's kind of how it looked to me at first coming in. And I realized, oh, it's a little more harder than I thought, but we have increased the budget on the streets.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. We did push for that a lot last year, and the city's doing that this year. So we'll be seeing a lot more.
Well, there's work. Some. And affordable housing is the other biggie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something we're really, as the closer we get to actual changes there, the more you realize, oh, people don't all agree. So my interest is trying to find where we do overlap the most on and get those things done at least, you know, so right now, I mean, I think one of the things that most people would agree on is that there's a little bit too much red tape.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do a business, a building project, it's harder than it should be.
Right.
So right now the city is, everybody's kind of rowing together on this to eliminate some of the
codes need to be rewritten or eliminated or something along those lines.
A big push here this month on stripping some of the codes away that seem like they won't have a negative impact. I hope. You never know.
Yeah.
Every time you change something, there's something going to change downstream.
So. Okay. We're really running short on time, unfortunately. But just in general, have you been surprised with what was handed to you once you were on city council?
A little bit. I think I was pleasantly surprised in a lot of ways, because I think everybody I've met working at the city is working really hard, you know, so it's not like there's no reason to go into the temple and flip the tables over. I don't feel like it's like that. It seemed to me right now, it's more of a, you know, getting the public more involved in the decisions we make is kind of the next step, is so people don't feel left out. You know, the golf course is a good example of trying to get as many people's voices involved. Everybody still feels frustrated because it's never perfect, but you know, more voices involved and more input in. We're working really hard on that kind of thing.
Yes. All right. Well, Ben, I want to thank you for being on the show. We've rushed through a lot of things here.
Yes.
This is Mary Ann McNellis from Our Town at KPTZ 91.9 FM. My guest has been Ben Thomas, who's a winemaker and a member of the Port Townsend City Council. And he's only 1 year into his tenure, and hopefully he will find a way to solve many problems for us and get that street near your house fixed.
Oh, boy.
Thank you for listening, and please keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community news.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Mary Ann McNellis and edited by Sonny Flores.